sit right down. Keep your hands up and keep your chin down. Shut the door. Time to go with Randy Harrison. Knockout Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, Knockout Radio with Randy Harris is about to start. So get ready for the best MMA talk, games, interviews, prizes, and surprises anywhere. For Knockout Radio, I'm the voice, Ray Flores, and now here's Knockout Radio.
Hey-o. Hey, everybody.
After a week in Los Angeles on Radio Row, back in town, back at the home front, and basically coming to you live from our new broadcast facility here at the St. Pete Racquet Club. Caleb here. I'm not going to call you Street Nat Matt, so Matt's here.
I'm here. This is where I reside. This is where I live now.
Yeah, I was here the other night. It was, like, packed.
It's crazy. It's such a good... I mean, it's a blessing, but I have no staff. I need help.
Come in.
There you go.
Caleb's too big for my kitchen. You can't put a lineman from the NFL in a kitchen that size. Like, I have to have an outdoor kitchen.
Caleb could be the presenter.
He could be the security.
No, we don't need that. The presenter.
The enforcer.
All right, let me run down real quick today's schedule.
Yes.
Schedule, as my dad used to say. I'm going to save the big one for a minute, even though he is first. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, a veteran of the UFC, Jim Miller, who goes back almost as far as me. I think he's like in the 80s, you know, UFC 80s, not that he's 80 years old.
You know
old.
What I like about Jim Miller is he's one of those things like fine wine. He keeps getting better with
Timex.
Age. He keeps getting better as he goes, like with the experience. And I always like watching his fights.
Second hour, he makes his inaugural appearance?
Initial.
He makes his initial bare knuckle appearance on Saturday as he takes on Julian Lane. Mike Perry scheduled to be on. And then we close out the show, or at least with guests, with Parker Porter, who fights this Saturday as well. Coming up after this very first break, kind of a big deal to me personally, and okay. I'll explain it, and I'll explain it to Chris Daughtry as well. As Chris Daughtry will be on in about 7-8 minutes.
Really? From the American Got Talent? Or
American Idol.
American Idol.
He was on American Idol, a big tour. He was just on, I don't know how many episodes ago. Caleb, do you watch The Masked Singer?
Not really, no.
Have you watched it?
I've seen it before.
It's not bad. No, it's cool.
It was like a controversy, right? People walk off because of Giuliani.
Yeah, two people walked off. One guy who's pretty much well-known because of his dad. And the other one is known because he's a really bad actor. Probably a good doctor, but a really bad actor. But yeah, that happened. But yeah, Daughtry will be on here momentarily.
Wow.
Coming to town? Yes, wow. I already know what you're thinking.
Well, yeah, we got to bring him here.
It's in the works.
I'll provide Facebook live music.
Of his or somebody else's?
Yeah, him. Like, here. I mean, I'm going to have Caleb run a couple plays for me when we get up from here.
Chris Daughtry comes to town the 24th at Ruth Eckerd and the 25th at the Hard Rock in Orlando.
That's so cool.
So,
but I like those shows. Like those shows didn't exist back in the day. You had to go traditional routes to be discovered. There's a lot of luck. You were a waiter or a waitress at a bar in L.A., and you hoped that somebody who had connections could sign you and make your dream a reality.
But that's everything. That's how Hulk Hogan got found.
Yeah.
You know, and you know that better than anybody. He's playing in a band off of Southdale Mabry.
Yeah.
And Dusty Rhodes happened to walk in, and the rest is history. And then he went on to become the second greatest wrestler of all time.
According to him.
Well, according to him, he's second.
But he just did that because Rick's... It was in his restaurant. He was being nice to the guy. He had a rough week. He announced his divorce.
Controversial opinion. I don't think any of those guys are that great of wrestlers.
Great personalities.
Well, Flair was a better wrestler than Hogan. I mean, he really was. Hogan was awful as a wrestler.
Yeah. Leg dropping.
Yeah, the leg
drop. You know
what
I'm saying? Like, come on. Right.
Nobody, including Derek Lewis, takes a faceplant better than Ric Flair.
Yeah. But the greatest, probably the greatest wrestler, Brock Lesnar, maybe. I mean, wrestler.
He's up there.
The Steiner brothers, maybe.
Kurt Angle.
Hardy.
Kurt Angle, yeah.
Hardy.
Yeah.
Who's bro? You know, it's RK Bro. What's bro's name? You know, he came from the UFC. He's the tag team champion. I can't think. Riddle.
Okay.
You know, Matt Riddle. You know, when you're talking wrestling.
Shelton Benjamin, which is great.
Right. AJ Styles is a great wrestler.
For sure.
You know, but yeah, so Terry said that Rick is, but you think it's just to be
collect. He was just being nice.
That's not like Terry, though.
Well, Rick had a tough week. He announced on social him and his wife were separating, so I think Terry was just trying to be nice to him.
All right, we need to hit this break now. It's a couple minutes early so that we will be ready and prepared when Chris Daughtry calls in and we talk about his tour and him coming to town and him being the Rottweiler on The Masked Singer and a few other things. Coming to you live from Tournament the Pizza here at the St. Pete Yacht Club, or Racquet Club. This is Knockout Radio, brought to you by 8 Man Strong and Staff Zone. We'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Alice Cooper talking with Randy Harris on Talking Sports.
8 Man Strong is not simply about the biggest or strongest. It's about those who have survived true lows, suffered, faced demons real or in their heads, and are fighting to come back against it all. If you live with a passion for greatness and strength and resilience towards all obstacles that may attempt to derail you, if you are bold and aggressive in the pursuit of the things you want in life, if you are meant to overcome everything that stands in your path of reaching your goals, then you are 8 Man Strong.
What were you doing 10 years ago? For me, I founded the Tour de Pizza, Tampa Bay's only cycling-themed pizzeria, where we combine gourmet pizza with an active lifestyle. Home of the world-famous pizza diet? At Tour de Pizza, we truly have a pizza for everybody. Classic New York style, Chicago deep dish, whole wheat low carb, flaxseed millet grain-free, and cauliflower crust to name a few. Proudly serving the greater St. Petersburg area for the past decade and running. Two locations, one great pizza, that's Tour de Pizza.
The Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg, presented by RP Funding, roars through the streets of beautiful downtown St. Petersburg, February 25th to the 27th. Tickets are on sale now at gpstpete.com. It's fast, fun, family entertainment, jam-packed into all 3 days. 10 races in all are on the weekend schedule. The big NTT IndyCar Series race takes the green flag on Sunday afternoon. It all happens at the Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg, presented by RP Funding, February 25th to the 27th. Get your tickets at gpstpete.com.
We're back in Dade City. Your adventure begins at the Bay Area Renaissance Festival. 8 stages of exciting and hilarious entertainment. Full contact, live armored jousting, mermaids, fairies, pirates, Vikings, and more. Endless shopping at more than 100 different artisan booths. The Bay Area Renaissance Festival. Family fun for all. Weekends, February 19th through April 3rd. Mark your calendars and get your tickets now at BayAreaRenFest.com.
Construction companies always face hiring challenges. Do you need temporary help on your project? Or maybe you want a true partner for all of your staffing needs? Staff Zone is construction staffing excellence, providing both skilled and general labor positions. And we want to work for you. For all of your construction staffing needs, call us at 877-247-ZONE or visit us online at thestaffzone.com to find your local branch. Our staffing professionals are eager and ready to earn your business. That's 877-247-ZONE.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, this is Cecil Fielder from Detroit, and you're talking sports with Randy Harris.
All right, we are back coming to you live from Tournament de Pizza, located, what's the address here?
170 47th Avenue, Northeast. Northeast is important.
It is.
We're back towards the water, right at the entrance of the Posito Bayou.
And for most people, if you don't know where it is, you know where Shorecrest is.
Of course.
And so it's located right there. All right, so momentarily, Chris Daughtry coming on. Caleb, do you want to talk what happened in L.A., or do you want to talk what happened in Houston?
Let's go with L.A. first.
Okay.
Let's go with L.A. first.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you what, I'll be honest with you. It was a much better game than I anticipated.
Yeah.
It was a much more competitive game than I expected. Cincinnati had some opportunities, but as usual, fans that are screaming about the pass interference down at the 5, what about the mugging that didn't get called and Cincinnati wouldn't have scored on a 97-yard bomb?
Exactly. I think guys don't understand kind of how the referees work. There's, you know, in a game like that, you want the guys to play, but that's the right call to make. In that situation in the game, I understand that they were upset because of when it happened. But those penalties throughout the game that weren't called. And so, but in that situation, you got to call that pass interference.
And don't you think it's more that they just blew the other one, not that they didn't see it?
Yeah. No, they blew it. And they were just letting the guys play. Like I said, Jim Ramsey's a physical corner. And so I guess they're like, hey, you know, go play ball, go do your thing. And it came to bite him on that play, but it's one of those things where, you know, you got sometimes.
Now, I saw, I don't know if it was a meme or if it was a real shot, and that's why, I don't know. But on the final play, Ramsey went down again, and the receiver was wide open, but Burrow didn't have time, you know, to see him or throw it. And like I said, you know, we don't do research here. We just run with whatever.
Yeah.
So if it's real, you know, it's a shame, but it shows how valuable offensive linemen are.
Yeah, no, it's huge. I mean, that game was a poster child for you need to protect your quarterback. You know, getting sacked 70 times in the season is ridiculous.
Now, how do you feel about the adage of defenses win championships? Like, do you buy into the hype of, like, it's all on the defensive side that actually wins the Lombardi?
I mean, it's not all on the defensive side, but when you get to the playoffs, look at the last few champions. Like, the Bucks went and played great defense against Kansas City. You know, they stifled him. They rushed the quarterback and got pressure on Mahomes. He looked terrible. This past week, Joe Burrow, he didn't look awful, but in the key situations, offensive line couldn't hold up. I mean, again, they're playing against a great defensive front. That's a long day for any group. You know, Von Miller, Leonard Floyd, A'shaun Robinson, Aaron Donald. That's a tough out for any offensive line, but those guys kind of struggled all year.
It is kind of funny. You listed four defensive linemen, and you list Aaron Donald last.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Who should have got co-MVP? Am I wrong? Am I right?
He should have won it outright.
Oh, outright.
It should have been between him and Von Miller. I think those guys both played amazing games.
And why don't they do MVP both sides of the ball for like a championship? Like, shouldn't they have two?
They do it for the season.
Yeah, they do. But I don't know. I like the prestige of it being won because it can be offense, defense. Whoever went out there had the best game should get it.
Unfortunately, and you know, I don't know the official number, but how many defensive players have won it? Two?
Not a lot. Yeah, they tend to lean to the offensive guy because I even thought the Patriots when they played the Rams, I thought a defensive guy should have got like
absolutely.
One of those guys should have got it because I mean, Jules played well, but it wasn't Super Bowl. He didn't have a Jamar Chase last game of the season kind of game. You know what I mean? So
didn't Dexter Jackson, wasn't he entitled for a MVP of
entitled
Super Bowl 2000?
Wasn't he entitled? I don't know what
that means. Did he do enough to earn it?
Think so.
The voting was in before he made his impact in the game.
Yeah. No.
They said something similar with Aaron Donald because the last drive he had the TFL to stop it on third down and then the sack on fourth down, but the voting was already in, so they missed that aspect of it. So
right, and we've talked about that before, but that wasn't the case with Dexter.
Yeah.
You know, it was Dexter, and Dwight has always said that he felt he deserved it. The problem, and not a problem, but here's where I stick with Dexter being the MVP. He had his interceptions early in the game. Dexter's were late and, yes, returned for touchdowns, but the game was already over.
Yeah.
So which one of those two helped set up the Buccaneers to win the Super Bowl? It'd be Dexter Jackson.
But Aaron Donald, he stopped the run, the third and one.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Right?
And then he got the pressure on the fourth
to me,
and
that's
one. Single-handedly, he took over the game. He solidified the championship for L.A. And congrats to the second home team.
In 2 years.
Well, technically, they were not the home team. Just saying.
They were the visitors. Home field, in the home stadium, with their home fans.
With the L.A. halftime show. It was, you know.
And what about the halftime show? Greatest halftime show since American Singer.
It was a great halftime show. And speaking of performers and singers, this is going to be pretty cool. I've been looking forward to this. Let's welcome to the program Chris Daughtry. Chris, how are you?
Hey, man. How you doing?
Well, we appreciate your time. Back on the road, I know you're coming to town. You're coming to Ruth Eckerd Hall on the 24th and the Hard Rock in Orlando on the 25th. What's it like to be back on the road?
It's cathartic. it was definitely missed, and we did what we could to, you know, stay busy when we couldn't tour, but, man, we didn't realize how much we were going to really miss it until about 6 weeks in, and now almost 2 years without touring. This has been very welcomed, and the energy's been incredible. We've done a few shows, and it's just been incredible to get back. The fans have been incredible.
I've talked to quite a few fans. My sister lives in Charlotte. She said that she's seen you twice, and I've heard nothing but it's one of the greatest shows they've ever seen.
Wow. Well, that's hard to believe. But I will take the compliment.
You know, I've talked about this before, that, you know, I've watched some of these music shows, and I see how people get, you know, moved by a song or moved by music. And I've never really understood that. You know, I'm a fan of music. I was just talking to Caleb Beninati, who plays for the Saints. He's one of our co-hosts. You know, I like music, but I've never been moved by it until your song, Gone Too Soon. As a grandfather of a stillborn grandson, all I can do is say thank you for that song, because that's the first song that really does not only move me, but I listen to it when I'm flying to cover a UFC and I'm bawling my eyes out on a plane.
Wow, man, that means a lot. Thank you so much. I wrote that with a dear friend of mine, Michael Busby. God rest his soul. He passed away a few years ago. Incredible songwriter. And I remember writing that song with him at my house. And I kind of, you know, I wasn't actually going through that at the time. It was actually, you know, we had twins on the way, and, you know, we're celebrating this while a friend of ours loses theirs. And it was this, you know, this interesting dichotomy of like wanting to celebrate, but also feeling the, you know, the sympathy for a friend who, you know, you don't, it feels like, oh, look, we have kids, and you know what I mean? It's this,
right.
It was this weird, guilty thing I was kind of experiencing when I wrote the song. And I just remember like getting up like in tears, because it was just, it was one of those songs that even I, as the writer, was moved in the process of writing that song. And that doesn't always happen. But that one, for some reason, really hit.
Ironic, as you're saying that, my other co-host, Matt over here, his wife was pregnant at the time of my daughter-in-law was pregnant, and he basically was saying those same things, how he couldn't really enjoy the pregnancy of his wife. Well, you tell the story, Matt.
Yeah, no, I mean, I saw how devastated Randy and his family were, and here I was at the happiest moment of my career, my life, having my daughter born, right. And I just, they were pregnant together, and I just couldn't celebrate and show such joy when I knew such grief was, you know, right around the corner, someone I cared so much about.
Absolutely. Completely makes sense.
So we'll move on in the conversation, but again, I want to thank you for that song. It means the world. I listen to it daily. I love it.
That means a lot. Thank you so much.
Now on a brighter note, a happier note, and that still was happy as well. I understand you're a fan of Batman, and I'm curious, which Batman was your favorite?
I'm surrounded by Batman right now, actually, in my office. I got the cowls and statues everywhere. I'm such a nerd. As a kid, you know, I remember, you know, I was a Batman fan just from like the cartoons and like the Super Friends and Superpowers cartoons. And you know, all I knew of Batman in regards to live action was, you know, the old Adam West show that had just started kind of re-airing. And it was kind of like, you know, it wasn't my favorite, but it was all we had, you know what I mean?
And
I remember when Michael Keaton Batman came out in 1989, I was like, I remember being a kid, just a 9-year-old kid in the theater, my jaw on the floor, and I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I was like, oh my God, this is like the Batman I've always wanted to see, you know, taken seriously, because all I knew of it was really just the bam, biff, you know, the
pow.
Yeah, exactly. And so I was terrified that that's what we were going to be getting, considering, you know, Michael Keaton, you know, he's a comedic actor, and I knew him from Beetlejuice at the time. So I didn't know what we were getting. I just remember, like, my whole world opened up when I saw that movie. And so I think, even though I love Ben Affleck as Batman in the Batman v Superman movie, I think he did a great job. But Keaton has always been my dude.
It's funny that you say Keaton, which was my favorite as well, but you bring up Beetlejuice, and I think of what was the Night Moves, I think it was called, where it was the...
Moonlighter?
No, you know, where they had all the autopsies, all the dead bodies, and he was running women. It was kind of funny.
So Chris, I actually...
I don't know that one.
You need to watch it. It's pretty funny. Him and Henry Winkler.
Oh, nice. Sounds like a blast.
Chris, I started with one question, but I came up with another one while we're sitting here talking. I'm just kind of curious. We had Bill Medley on from the Righteous Brothers a couple weeks ago, and he disclosed that he didn't even realize that his song, You Lost That Love and Feeling, was in the Top Gun movie until it hit the big screen. That back then, the record labels owned everything. They owned the masters. They owned the rights.
Yeah.
So from the American Idol world, like where is that in today's world? Is it still true to that day? Like, is your music yours? You own it? Or can it just show up someday on a big movie in an iconic scene like the Righteous Brothers?
You know, as far as I know, they have to reach out to the songwriter or the publisher to get clearance. And, you know, I feel like, speaking from experience, I've had moments where I've seen my stuff show up in a movie or even just my name being used, and like Step Brothers, for instance, you know, they like shout me out in the movie, and I had no idea that was coming. And it was like, for me, I was super excited when I, you know, it wasn't about the money. It was just the cool factor. But there have been times where a song has shown up and I'll be like, oh, that's interesting. And then my manager will be like, oh yeah, I forgot to tell you, I've signed off on that. it's such a non-event, or, you know, such a, like a no-brainer request that management will go ahead and just say yes. But you know, there's a lot of people that will deny that sort of thing, and for me, like, I mean, I'm okay with people using my stuff. You know, I think it's flattering. It's cool to be attached to another piece of art in a different way, you know. So I think I always love that, the idea.
Well, that's good to hear, Chris, because at my new restaurant I just opened this week, it's at a country club. It's a private tennis facility. And I'm actually playing your music right now on this.
And you want to make sure you don't get in trouble.
So with your permission. And when you come to town, I'll be honored to cook for you and your crew when you come in town.
No problem.
And
we'll have BMI send you the bill. And not a problem.
Matt is no longer my co-host on this show.
Chris, I'm always interested to understand successful people, how they work and their processes. So for me, being away from touring for so long, that first time you got back on stage, did you have butterflies? And what is your process for getting ready to go on tour? And, you know, what are some routines that you have that you need to have to stay on top of it, have your voice right, and kind of have a successful tour?
Yeah, as far as getting back on stage, it was kind of like getting back on a bike
that's,
you know, a little rusty. You know, you need to put some oil in the chain. But, the first couple shows we did coming back, you know, after such a long break, I remember the audience was still trying to figure it out, too. It was like, you know, do we get excited? You know, everybody's terrified of, you know, spitting on the person next to them or breathing. You know, it was such a weird thing to kind of witness. But things seem to be more back to, I guess, quote unquote, normal. At least the last few shows we've done. And as far as butterflies, I don't really get butterflies. It's more just, you know, wanting to feel the music and not be so caught up in my head that I'm doing what I think I should be doing or standing where I think I should be standing. You know what I mean? I try to like get out of my head and just feel, you know, let the music kind of take over, so to speak.
Do you notice the crowd when you're playing? Because when I'm out there playing, during the plays, it's like I can't hear what the crowd's going, what's going on with the crowd. I'm listening for communication, and the play happens, and when the play's over, I'm aware of the crowd again. So what's that like for you playing in front of all the people?
That's a great question, because half the time, maybe more than half, I'm not aware, because my eyes, like, involuntarily close when I start singing, and it's like I leave my body for a minute. And then, you know, we have crowd mics that pick up the audience, so if I'm like having them sing a part or something, at least I'm not like listening to crickets. But as far as being aware, there's been so many times where like someone will be like, oh, did you see me out there? And I just want to say yes, but I can't. Where you were.
I had somebody once ask me, I was in the Navy. They're like, my uncle was in the Navy. Have you ever met him?
my friend lives in Texas. Do you know him?
Exactly. Before we talk about Dearly Beloved and some of the tracks on it, are you a fan of sports? Obviously, this is a sports radio show. We go outside the box and talk music and a whole bunch of other stuff. But what sports do you enjoy watching?
That's a great question. I'm not a huge sports fanatic. So, you know, when it comes to, you know, what's my favorite sport, you know, if I had to pick one, I'd probably pick football. But unless I'm actually there, I don't really enjoy watching it. Like, I appreciate it. And, you know, I see enough of it with the guys on the bus. And, you know, they're all sports fanatics, but I like to be in the presence of a good game. I like the experience, but you know, watching it from home isn't a real fun activity for me.
I got you. So, Caleb, can you get Chris to a Saints game?
Yeah, I was gonna set that up, man. It's a great atmosphere.
I've actually been to a Saints game.
Isn't it nuts?
It is. It was. There were still speakers like hanging from the ceiling of the dome.
Yeah.
I remember it was a few years after.
Crazy. But before we run out of time, obviously, you know, talk to us about your newest album, your sixth studio album in Dearly Beloved. And I listened to Changes Are Coming last night, and an awesome, awesome song.
Thank you so much. This record has been probably the most cathartic record of my career. It was the record that I've been wanting to make ever since I can remember, as far as sonically and just speaking musically. Not necessarily I've had these songs for this long, but you know, this was the type of record that I've been wanting to make, and it feels very personal. And the way it turned out, I could not be happier. And honestly, I think it's the first time that I can remember that the fans have unanimously been, you know, pumped about that. We haven't had anyone on the side going, man, I really wish he'd get back to that old sound, or man, I really wish it sounded more like this record or this record. This is the first time that we haven't heard that in so long. It just feels right. Feels like it feels like us more than any other record, I think, I would say.
So, Chris, how do you navigate
that? Coming kind of was the last song written for the record. It kind of came in last minute on an idea that I had kind of started at home and brought it to the studio, and it was kind of like the answer to all the dark stuff we were writing at the time. You know, we had this heavy riff and groove, but the lyrics felt so hopeful and kind of like a light at the end of the tunnel, you know, with like World on Fire or Heavy as the Crown and all these other songs in the record that kind of were dealing with the, you know, the dark mindset of what we're all kind of going through in the last couple of years. And then this being like, you know, it can't be like this all the time, right? There's got to be something hopeful at the end of this. And that was our answer to that.
So, Chris, how do you navigate through, this is your sixth album, so you've grown as an artist from your first album to this album. How do you navigate, like you said, fans saying, oh, he needs to get back to the old sound, when you might have evolved from it and you're grown and you want to go in a different direction? How do you fight that battle of pleasing the fans and giving them what they want, but also you as an artist being able to express yourself?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, you just have to be honest with yourself. And there was a couple records where, I guess in the thick of it, I felt like, oh, this is just, you know, me experimenting and this is the way to go. And a part of that would be true, but a big part of it was listening to so many voices, you know, and so many people getting in your ear that I think it got to a point where I didn't even know what was good anymore. I didn't actually know what I believed in, you know, as far as my own writing and things that I was kind of channeling or, you know, for lack of better terms, chasing. You know, you see what other bands are doing or other groups that were, you know, kind of in your wheelhouse, and then you say, well, you know, everybody's changing with the times, there's no guitars on the radio, and you know what I mean? You start listening to these things and these other people going, oh, what you should be doing is, and it was so much noise that I kind of forgot what my own voice sounded like. So after Cage to Rattle, which was, you know, in my opinion, that record was me trying my best to get back into the good graces of rock. And I felt like I just was up against a wall at the end of the day with the people that were, you know, surrounding the record. And once we broke away from that label and I was able to take time away from it and hear my own voice and be like, what gets me excited about music? You know, instead of listening to what's hot on the radio or whatever, I started going back, listening to the records that made me want to do this in the first place. You know, like old Soundgarden, you know, Bad Motorfinger, Super Unknown, and Facelift and Dirt from Alice in Chains and Throwing Copper Live. You know, the records that made me want to pick up a guitar and get in front of a mic in the first place. And I was listening to those records and it just, I felt that excitement again, that you know, that energy that I felt as a teenager, you know, that I wanted to be a rock star. And I was like, well, why am I not making records like that? You know, that's what inspired me to begin with. And so that was kind of the impetus of this record is the catalyst, rather, musically speaking.
That's awesome.
And yeah. I think by doing what I felt was true to me, the fans couldn't help but see that as well.
Yeah. And you'll be back at it here in the Tampa Bay area next week on the 24th at Ruth Eckerd, 25th at the Hard Rock. Chris, thank you very much for your time. If you have
thank you so much.
Your people know how to get a hold of me. We'll send the limo to pick you and the band and everybody up. We'll bring you down to the pizzeria. We'll shut it down, open it up just for you guys to come and enjoy some awesome Italian food.
It's more of a restaurant now.
Let's do it. Man, you don't have to convince me of a good time.
All right. We'll get it set up. Chris, thank you very much. Looking forward to seeing you next week in town.
Have a great one.
Take care. Chris Daughtry, everybody.
Awesome guy.
Yeah, very cool.
Great story, too.
It's
kind of like fourth place because in all competitions, it's all by rank. But, like, he's the Tom Brady of music.
Let's hit this break when we come back. UFC talk as we get ready for Shocking, another event this Saturday. Jim Miller when we return. This is Knockout Radio, brought to you by 8 Man Strong and Staff Song. We'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
8 Man Strong is not simply about the biggest or strongest. It's about those who have survived true lows, suffered, faced demons real or in their heads, and are fighting to come back against it all. If you live with a passion for greatness and strength and resilience towards all obstacles that may attempt to derail you, if you're bold and aggressive in the pursuit of the things you want in life, if you are meant to overcome everything that stands in your path of reaching your goals, then you are 8 Man Strong.
The Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg, presented by RP Funding, roars through the streets of beautiful downtown St. Petersburg, February 25th to the 27th. Tickets are on sale now at gpstpete.com. It's fast, fun, family entertainment, jam-packed into all 3 days. 10 races in all are on the weekend schedule. The big NTT IndyCar Series race takes the green flag on Sunday afternoon. It all happens at the Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg, presented by RP Funding, February 25th to the 27th. Get your tickets at gpstpete.com.
Does your garage door opener seem to have a mind of its own? Or is it a squeaky or noisy garage doors? Sounds like they need a simple tune-up. Call Moores Boulevard Garage Doors. That's M-O-R-S-E Boulevard Garage Doors at 727-522-5070. I'm so glad I did, and they fixed my garage door correctly on the very first visit. Moores Boulevard Garage Doors offers 24/7 service and no extra charge for nights or weekend emergency calls. Repair or replace your garage door with Moores Boulevard Garage Doors. Call them today at 727-522-5070.
Calling all Rocky Balboa fans, check out the sock collection available at oddsocksofficial.com.
If you're a Breaking Bad fan or WWE or South Park, check out the sock collection available at oddsocksofficial.com. Scarface, Godfather, Back to the Future, and Jaws, and many others available at oddsocksofficial.com. Double Dare, SpongeBob, Street Fighter, and did I mention Rocky Balboa? All available at oddsocksofficial.com. That's oddsoxofficial.com. If you can't find a pair to wear, then why do you have feet?
Come back for the magic. Come back for the laughter. Come back to the Bay Area Renaissance Festival. Our 8 stages are filled with hilarity and delight. All your favorites and some new surprises. 100 artisans make this a world-class marketplace, overflowing with beautiful treasures. And the food, oh, the food is fit for a king. With treats to tease and tempt every palate. The Bay Area Renaissance Festival. Weekends, February 19th through April 3rd. Visit BayAreaRenFest.com for directions and tickets.
Got bills? Looking for work, but nobody is hiring? StaffZone is. As the leading provider of commercial construction, industrial, and special event staffing throughout the Southeast and Texas, StaffZone has plenty of work to go around, and they need you now. Don't wait. Go now to www.thestaffzone.com and find a branch closest to you. Work today, get paid today. That's the StaffZone way.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Larry the Cable Guy from the Blue Collar Comedy Tour, and you're talking sports with Randy Harris.
All right, we are back coming to you live from Tournament de Pizza. We'll be here each and every Wednesday from
now
here until
Super Bowl next year in Arizona.
Or until we get back with the UFC being able to broadcast live from there. Right now, we'll continue being honored by having guests on via the phone. And let's welcome to the program Jim Miller. Jim, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. Thank you for having me.
I was going to try to come up with something funny, like, you know, you've only had a few of these fight, you know, weeks and such. But obviously, we know that's not true. So, I mean, talk about what it's like to have another fight week. And is it any different from the first one or the 10th one or the 28th one?
They've definitely changed over the years. You know, the first one was a bit of a trip because that was the first time I ever fought out of New Jersey, and I was fighting in Birmingham, in England. So I went from, you know, the typical stuff down in Atlantic City and not really having, like, a fight week, more so having, like, the day of weigh-ins and then fight day to crossing the Atlantic Ocean and doing that. So that was definitely a different one, and there have been some different ones over the years, but at this point I've done this so many times that it's all kind of comfortable, and you almost kind of look for it, you know, want to do it. You know, like, even right. Even now with the COVID restrictions, being locked in the hotel, and, you know, we're off the strip and you're not dealing with anything, there's nice sides about it. And, you know, it's just kind of gearing me up for fight day.
I've always broadcasted live the week of, you know, wherever the UFC is, and we've always been able to sit, you know, table to table. But because of the last 2 years, you know, everything's now by phone. So it is a little different for us as well, and we're hoping that, you know, we can get that changed. I'm curious, since this is your 39th UFC fight week, do you sign on the same spot of the fight poster every time?
No. No, I sign wherever I can. You know, and try to do it as quickly as possible.
get in and get out.
I think it's a couple thousand that I've signed. So, I'm not the type that really takes time with their signature either. So.
What's the difference, in your opinion, in the sport, you know, from when you first started, you know, to this week? Is it something, you know, that comes to mind of the biggest change, in your opinion?
You know, I'd just say the reach. And that has to do with the growth of the sport of mixed martial arts and the growth of the UFC, and also with, you know, just the way that the media is consumed these days. It's the sport is bigger, and I think kind of everything is bigger because of social media. But it's still kind of weird sometimes, you know, getting recognized even locally, you know, like. People say that, oh, I follow you on Instagram, and I got to laugh because I don't know what, you know, if they're following me because of the MMA or my silly videos and stuff like that I put out. So, I think the growth is just, it's been amazing to be a part of it.
You know, and that's where I believe too, and I've covered the UFC since UFC 1, UFC 11 was the first one. I was there covering credentialed. And, you know, I remember back in the day, and I remember, you know, nobody caring and nobody really watching and nobody really seeing. And the last couple Radio Rows, I just came back and brought Chuck Liddell out, and the swarm of media, fans, other athletes that wanted to meet Chuck or take a picture with Chuck, to me is like, yeah, we're slowly getting there. We may not be there yet, but we're pretty close.
Yeah, it's nuts. You know, there is so much more reach. I mean, there was kind of those like the heydays with the really big expos and stuff like that. But I fought on Fox, I fought on ESPN. Like I didn't imagine that would happen. You know, when I first started fighting.
Are you a collector of like the cards? You know, now Panini has taken over the trading cards of the UFC. Do you collect those? Have you seen them, or do you want some?
I don't really collect. No. But it's cool. I'm trying to gather some things for my kids, you know, to have. Unfortunately, I don't have too many of the cards right now, because when they were younger, I had a bunch, and then they like messed around with them and folded them all up and tore them up, and so they didn't get kept very well. But yeah, it's cool. It's cool to have that stuff, like the action figure too. My kids they beat that one up pretty quickly.
What would you say was the toughest fight of your career to date? And you've been in the UFC so long and seen so much and seen the MMA growth. Is there any fighters that you enjoy watching that you like their style, or their skill, or their toughness?
I mean, there are lots of fighters that I'm a fan of. Cub Swanson's been one of those guys that I've always enjoyed watching him fight, and I've enjoyed, you know, him kind of pulling himself back up, you know, in the last couple of years. And you know, I'm a big fan of Robert Whittaker as well. You know, and what was the first part of that question? Sorry.
So, what was your toughest fight of your career to date?
Toughest fight of my career. I mean, I think my lead up to the fight with Dustin Poirier was really difficult, and that was a hard one. And then that fight, I remember just kind of the reaction of some of the people that were coming into the octagon after the fight.
Yeah.
You know, my Muay Thai coach, he brings it up all the time. He says, like, the look on Joe Rogan's face coming into that, into the octagon was like he was, you know, walking up on a car accident.
Yeah.
that was a fight where it was hard. It was a hard one to get to, and then to go in and fight with Dustin, and, you know, and we're both banging each other up and hurt. And, that was a tough one, but there's been some tough ones over the years too. So it's, they're all difficult in their own way.
Yeah. How long after a grueling fight like that, how long does it take for you to start feeling back to normal again? Back to, yeah, I can get back in the octagon and fight again. What's that process like? How long does it take to get back to normal?
I mean, it all depends on, you know, like what I've got these days, like what I've got going on outside. I mean, there's things that pull me away from the gym then sometimes it takes a little bit longer, you know, to think like, hey, I'm gonna get right back in there. I've hopped right back into training a few days later on plenty of occasions where I've had tough fights, you know, even fight of the night. So the bumps and the bruises that come from fighting, you know, having an actual fight are not that bad. I mean, you bang yourself up. There's a lot more like bruising and stuff like that because you're not wearing as much protective gear as when you're sparring. But I've been fortunate enough to not really have to deal with any like super bad injuries from fights. Honestly, a lot of them come from training. So the turnaround can vary. You know, sometimes I'd like to fight, you know, every 2 to 3 months if I could. And there have been plenty of times where I would have been ready, you know, a few weeks later.
It's interesting that that question came from Caleb, Jim. Caleb is an offensive lineman with the New Orleans Saints. So, you know, a lot of times they compare, you know, the banging that goes on with the O-line and the D-line, you know, to a fist fight, to an MMA fight. So it's, you know, kind of ironic that that was your question.
Definitely. I'm always interested to see everybody's, you know, process, how they get better, how they recover, you know, how they kind of get in game mode.
Jim, talk about your opponent. A couple days away from you getting back in and doing what you do and what you love to do, getting inside the octagon. Give me your thoughts on him.
You know, I mean, he's another dangerous guy. They're all dangerous. You know, he's a good, like, Brazilian-style striker, throws good hooks, good rear leg high kicks. I was actually laughing because I saw a headline about one of my interviews before, and it said that, you know, Nick is one of my weirder opponents. And I said it was weird because he's, like, my height or shorter. You know, and it's like they made the headline like I was saying something odd about him, but it was just saying that I'm fighting somebody that's not 6 feet tall, which seems to be like just about every opponent at this point. There was definitely a stretch there where it was 6 feet and taller for like a good 2-3 years, it seemed like. But yeah, he's a good tough dude, you know, about 10 years younger than me, but he's been fighting for a while. And I look at these guys that are making their debut as extremely dangerous because it's, you know, like, what do they have to lose? You know, like, I look at myself in that position, it's like, man, I look forward to the fights when I get to fight the guys like Quay Glida, Clay, and you know, these other like legends and stuff like that, and like, man, like, if I had the opportunity to just hop in, you know, for a big fight against a big name, like, I'm just throwing myself out there and I'm going to fight as hard as I can, and I think it's going to be an awesome night. You know, I even look at, you know, down the line when I am making my final walk to the octagon, like, gives me goosebumps because it's like, oh, there's nothing left to hold back for. So I kind of look at his position, it's like, man, he's going to be dangerous because he's going to come out and fight as hard as he can fight. So yeah, it's a tough fight, just like all of them. You know, I'm looking to use my experience and my grappling advantage to make him make a mistake. And you know, if I can land some good strikes in the process, then great. But yeah, I feel like I've got an advantage in the grappling department, and I plan on using it.
Does it put a little more pressure on you, if that's even possible? You know, taking what you just said, he has nothing to lose. And if his victory or his first victory or early victory is against a Jim Miller, I mean, that's to start him off on a pretty big career.
Yeah, I mean, that's for him to deal with. You know, like, for me, it's, if somebody's standing across the octagon from me, they're dangerous. You know, it doesn't really matter to me. You know, I've been on long streaks. You know, I was I had 7 wins in a row in the octagon. I was 9-1 in the UFC, and it's like there was no more pressure to go out and win in any of those than, you know, the previous one or any after that. You know, when you are on a skid, then it stinks. You know, and it's hard to, like, not put a little extra pressure on yourself to get the W. But when I'm in the octagon, all I'm thinking about is the fight and the guy in front of me, and you know, how do I win? How do I make him fight to my strengths and get a dominant victory?
After these UFC fights, you see all the time, you guys hug it out, you know, after beating each other up for, you know, 20-25 minutes. What are those emotions that are going on? Like, you know, because a lot of people see it like, dang, they just punched each other in the face for 15-20 minutes. How do you give the guy a hug afterwards? So what are those emotions, and, like, how much respect do you guys show for your opponents? I think that's really dope.
You know, I'm the type that I don't have to harbor any, like, anger or hatred, you know, like, I've got some peers that they seem like they need to get mad at the guy standing in front of them. And it's like, I trained with my brother for a long time, and he was my main training partner for years. And it's like, you could have turned the camera on and paid us, and we still would have sparred the same way, you know, like, we still would have gone just as hard because we're going hard with each other to make each other better. So, like, I don't need to have any of like the emotions come into it. I mean, my first fight with Joe Lozon, we were like 2 months prior. We were at an event at Walter Reed together, and he's offering. I was in a walking boot from the Diaz fight, and he was willing to push me in a wheelchair. And then, yeah. Like 6 months later, we're in this bloodbath of a fight, and you know, during the pause, it's like, hey man, great fight, you know, or like fist bumping and having a conversation, because it's like we're the same guys in the octagon that we are outside the octagon.
That's awesome.
But like for me, it's not. There's not like an emotional roller coaster or anything like that. Like I'll go in and mix it up with anybody, and you know, I have the utmost respect for him because I know that they're making the same sacrifices that I'm making.
Yeah.
So, like,
hey, Jim,
like,
so
do this with my kids or whatever, and I'm banged up and it's hard. You know, like,
yeah.
I feel for everybody that does this.
So you've been doing this such a long time. You know, my question is, you know, obviously the endurance and the gas tank these guys have is changed the game. You know, these things evolve with time. Yeah, but what's the biggest difference between squaring up on Saturday night versus when you made your debut back in the day? Like, what's the biggest strategy difference of today's fight?
I think that there's less focus on like having an offensive guard, right? Nowadays, it's just everybody's trying to get up. So you know, you're not necessarily as worried about somebody's attacking off their back. More so, trying to just keep them down and pass and you know. And do damage and create an opportunity for yourself. But I think there's this kind of this evolution in the body type of fighters. I mean, if you look at a lot of our champs, they're long, lankier guys. You know, from Oliveira to Adesanya. You know, and you had, I mean, Jones when he was at 205, and Anderson, like. They were kind of the first ones to do it. So guys like myself that are, you know, shorter for the weight class and a little denser, I guess, it's kind of going away from that. It's going to, you know, a longer athlete. You know, I'm gonna try to force my opinions on everybody until my career is done.
Caleb, you got both going for you. You're 6'6 and 320. You got both.
We are talking to Jim Miller. Gets back in the octagon this Saturday. Jim, what can the fans expect to see when that gate shuts?
A quintessential Jim Miller fight. You know, like I'm coming out to fight as hard as I can for as long as I can, and impose my will on them. And if it's a rough night, I'm still fighting. If there's time on the clock, I'm still fighting, you know? That is an attitude thing and less of like, hey, you know, as a young athlete, I could do it. I'm still always going to show up, to fight as hard as I can for 15 minutes. That's really it, you know, and I'm always looking for that abrupt, you know, violent end to a fight. Whether there's, you know, whether we're 2 minutes into the fight or there's, you know, 2 seconds left.
And that definitely is a Jim Miller fight. Jim, thank you very much for your time. I believe we have your address. We're going to send you a care package from 8-Man Strong, as well as the box of socks from Odd Sock Official. I think you're going to like them.
Thank you very much.
All right. Have fun on Saturday. That's Jim Miller, a veteran.
Veteran.
You know,
And always entertaining fight. Always. And getting better with age. I mean,
you know, fights. Like he just said, you know what you're getting from a Jim Miller fight.
Sure.
Now, it's up to the opponent, you know, to do his job.
Sure.
You know, and that's what's, you know, we talk about a lot about, you know, fight of the night, performance of the night. You know, you can be Jim Miller. You can be Clay Guida, the old Clay Guida. You know what he's bringing. The other guy doesn't bring it too. It is a little different. But Jim Miller kind of brings it out of you know, because he doesn't stop. And it should be a lot of fun. So. In the second hour, we're going to talk about UFC, what was it, 271?
271.
I can't believe that.
I think it's 71.
Okay, I'm probably mistaken.
No, I'm saying I can't believe. I was at 11.
Yeah. You know, yeah. It's just how fast time flies.
I was trying to remember last time I saw a Jim Miller fight. I was trying to remember by the food in the media room, which arena I was in.
Good call. Second hour, we're going to speak to Mike Perry and Parker Porter and some more shenanigans coming to you live from Tournament de Pizza here in St. Pete. We've got some Renaissance tickets to give away.
Yes.
Come buy a slice. Come buy a drink. Get some tickets. We'll be right back.
Turkey legs.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
8-Man Strong is not simply about the biggest or strongest. It's about those who have survived true lows, suffered, faced demons real or in their heads, and are fighting to come back against it all. If you live with a passion for greatness and strength and resilience towards all obstacles that may attempt to derail you, if you are bold and aggressive in the pursuit of the things you want in life, if you are meant to overcome everything that stands in your path of reaching your goals, then you are 8-Man Strong.
The Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg, presented by RP Funding, roars through the streets of beautiful downtown St. Petersburg, February 25th to the 27th. Tickets are on sale now at gpstpete.com. It's fast, fun, family entertainment, jam-packed into all 3 days. 10 races in all are on the weekend schedule. The big NTT IndyCar Series race takes the green flag on Sunday afternoon. It all happens at the Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg, presented by RP Funding, February 25th to the 27th. Get your tickets at gpstpete.com.
What were you doing 10 years ago? For me, I founded the Tour de Pizza, Tampa Bay's only cycling-themed pizzeria, where we combine gourmet pizza with an active lifestyle. Home of the world-famous pizza diet? At Tour de Pizza, we truly have a pizza for everybody. Classic New York style, Chicago deep dish, whole wheat low carb, flaxseed millet grain-free, and cauliflower crust, to name a few. Proudly serving the greater St. Petersburg area for the past decade and running. Two locations, one great pizza. That's Tour de Pizza.
Got bills? Looking for work, but nobody is hiring? StaffZone is. As the leading provider of commercial construction, industrial, and special event staffing throughout the Southeast and Texas, StaffZone has plenty of work to go around, and they need you now. Don't wait. Go now to www.thestaffzone.com and find a branch closest to you. Work today, get paid today. That's the Staff Zone way.
WTAN, Clearwater.
FM 106.1.
WDCF, Dade City.
FM 102.3.
WZHR, Zephyr Hills.
FM 104.3.
Listen.